welcome to the Voice of the Force podcast for Temple Archives, covering some more High Republic today. My name's Dan, and I'm joined by my co-hosts, Ed and Noma.
Hello, hello.
Hello there.
How are you guys doing today? How was the stream?
It was good. It was good.
Very good day.
Well, I'll talk about it a little bit more, but we've successfully completed our first game, so that's a lot of fun.
Fun. I hope.
And, yeah.
I don't know how we wouldn't.
So the only way the stream could have been better is if I'd fully known what I was getting into at the end and could have figured out a way to ramp it up even more. Because I did not get my, we'll talk about it, but I did not get my teeth kicked in as much as I thought. It was just like someone started to light a fire.
Oh, really? Interesting. Was it the New Republic?
Yeah. No.
It was everybody.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah. They were a bit annoying, but Iriadu just came in and was like, all of this belongs to us now. And I was like, oh, okay.
Hello, Tarkin Doctrine. You can try. All over again. My goodness. But we're not talking about the stream today. We're talking about the High Republic Phase 2. Ed, which book are we covering today?
Today we're discussing the events of the High Republic Romeo and Juliet. Convergence.
Damn it, you beat me to it.
These Romeo and Juliet books are we going to cover?
You know what?
A few of them.
If we cover another one like this, I won't be upset.
It was
surprising. Very slow book, but it turns into what has been one of the most enjoyable ones of the High Republic so far. Then again, it has to compete with things like Into the Dark, which that's still going to be top.
Jedi too.
It's a good book. So we're gonna get into a little bit. We're gonna talk about what happened. This is the second book of Phase 2. So we're gonna discuss what may happen potentially in the next ones, how they might also potentially link up into what we know for Phase 1, and if there were any Easter eggs of any way, shape, or form, or things that you might draw to either the Old Republic, the prequel Republic, Empire, even sequel trilogy. We'll talk about those. Again, this is the second book of Phase 2 of the High Republic. This is still 150 years before Light of the Jedi, and it's 350 years before the prequels. If there's something you enjoyed in this book that we don't happen to mention, or there's something you want more clarification on, or just more interesting thoughts if we run out of time and you want to know more, please contact us. There's many ways to do so. Noma's going to give you some of that information now. If there's anything you do miss, fear not. We will repeat these at the end of the episode.
Absolutely. One of the easiest ways to get in contact with us is our website, and that is voiceoftheforce.com. There's also our email, which is voiceoftheforce@gmail.com. Social media-wise, we're on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads. The handle for all three is @voiceforcepod. As always, retweeting and reposting our new episode tweets does help with growing our listener base and is very much appreciated. And you can listen, rate, review, follow, and subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audible, and all major podcast platforms. Reviewing us with 5 stars and a comment helps with visibility, and you can subscribe for free for the latest episode as soon as it releases. Now that we're at the end, of course, I've got to plug our Twitch. That is twitch.tv/voiceforcegaming. We're having a lot of fun over there. We hope you'll swing by and take a look. The most popular day for us right now is our Saturday. That's Saturday at 3 p.m. Currently, like we said at the top, we were playing Star Wars Empire at War Thrawn's Revenge. We've finished that now. It took half an hour to crush the New Republic. It was not that tough. And then we decided for the last stream, which you can still find on our Twitch, and in the future you should be able to find on our YouTube channel as a VOD. But we decided, well, I decided that it would be fun if I cranked the difficulty up to max in a previous save and see how long it takes before the game beats me to death. And while it was not as fast as an Oblivion as I was expecting, Ed can, attest to the fact that it went from like one invasion every 5 minutes to one every like 45 seconds.
Yeah, like, got aggressive.
Yeah. It got crazy. My favorite part of the stream was that Karnor Jax led the Empire for a whole week, which is even shorter than his reign in the comics, which was hilarious to me. I think he lasts 6 months in the Royal Guard comics. But he did not do so good. He was a stepping stone for Admiral Dala. And then she immediately rescinded command to Pelion. So it was a fun time. But yeah, so that's Saturdays. We stream two other days usually. The first of those is Tuesday at 10 p.m. EST. Myself and a friend of mine, Roomba Friend, are currently streaming Elden Ring co-op. So that's been going pretty good. We're at the equivalent of Elden Ring Hogwarts. Going through there, fighting a bunch of Burger King mascots. It's a fun time. where I die an embarrassing amount of times. But ignore that. And then, yeah, on Fridays, I do a Star Wars Arma. If you don't know Arma, it is a military simulator. It's quite a lot of fun, quite realistic. I really enjoy it. But I'm with a group called the 91st Mobile Reconnaissance Force. So we just finished up our campaign. We're going to do, by the time you listen to this, we'll probably be doing our field training exercises where we're just kind of trying to drill skills into the unit. And then after that, we'll be back to a campaign. So it's a fun time all around. If you want to see the POV of the armor division or kind of like the overlords who are commanding the mission and setting up enemy forces and stuff, then that's what I do. So you can join in on, once again, Fridays at 6 p.m. EST. But yeah, we hope you join. We're on our way to, I guess, making subscriptions valid. It's like one small step at a time, but we've hit affiliate, so we've got some free emotes, a couple of channel points rewards, and, you know, we're super down to figure out ways to make it worthwhile for you guys to watch. So if you've got any hints or ideas or suggestions for that, absolutely drop us a line. I'd love to hear about them.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys. And before we get into this book and the review of the book, I'm going to give you guys a spoiler warning. If you have not read this book or the book prior to this, you might want to go do that so then you are up to date with what's happening in Phase 2. And then you're not going to get spoiled on this book and wonder what the hell is going on. But we'll try and do our best synopsis. No one's going to be doing that. And then we'll get into some discussion between the three of us a little bit later in the podcast. Without further ado, let's get into the credits.
So this is, as we said at the top, The High Republic Convergence. The authors are Zoraida Cordova. The cover artist is Yi-Young Lee. And the narrator for the audiobook is Mark Thompson. Now, as always, if I've mispronounced anybody's names, I do apologize for that. Yeah, so this story is, it's not the first book in part two, but it makes sense why it's the second, because it's really kind of setting up everything that we'd already known about and what's changed. We've got like four to five different plot lines that are all going on at the same time. So there's quite a lot. It is, like Ed said, and I absolutely agree with him, the first two parts are very slow. It's a lot of setting up the part of the universe we're in and the new timeline and all this other stuff and all these events that they've been kind of talking about. Like they mentioned, you know, the hyperspace disaster in part one. And then at part three, it starts ramping up. And then at part four, everything hits the fans. So the first plot that we're basically following is we are now looking at something that was mentioned in the first book, which is that there is a civil war going on between two different planets. One is called Iram, and the other one is Aranok. They've been at war for it's never like set as like how long it's been, but at one point they do reference that the main character of this plot's grandparents were in this war. We're also told at a certain point that a 3-day ceasefire is the longest ceasefire that's ever happened. So it's like those kinds of things.
Because they had centuries of peace, and then they said, yeah, that was like a long time ago. Well, and then
they had centuries of peace, and then the war started. Yeah. And then we're not told how long the war's been going on for outside of the Ziri's grandparents were part of it.
Yeah, and the two planets are then, like freaking like night and day, like in terms of environment. It's insane. Like Aranok, the dusty rock, and Iram, the oceans, like everywhere.
Iram's a big ocean planet, right? Yeah. And they've got like opposite things. Like Aranok's entire thing is like minerals and metals, and they say like marble and jewels and things like that. And Iram's entire thing is just like food and water, which is like something that is kind of weird.
They talked like a Spartan thing later on, where it's like they give you this blade and you go out to like the wilderness and survive, didn't they? A little bit.
That's Aronox's thing.
Yeah, that's
what, it's
yeah.
like the it.
Yeah, it's almost, on Arano, you pretty much get a you take your Bane Blade, they drop you somewhere. I, like, all right, come on.
We're gonna have to talk about that because
I was like,
that is one thing that I hated throughout the entire story.
The blade
it kept fucking with me. This specifically the name, and I'll talk about it afterwards because it's not relevant to the synopsis. I'll explain it afterwards.
Okay, sounds good.
But that was not the first time I've heard the word Bane Blade.
Okay.
So, anyways, the first part of the story is basically that we're setting up Iram and Aranok. And their moon, which I can't remember what Iram calls it, but in Aranok, it's the Timekeeper's moon. Basically, there's two planets on opposite sides. There's a moon that's suspended in between. So we learn from Ziri, who is a fleet captain and also the princess of the planet, that this war has been going on forever. And they're at this, it kicks off with this like stalemate that they're at, where they've, Ziri basically pleaded with her father, who I don't know if we're ever told his name.
He's
with an M. What's his title? It's the it's not the magistrate. It's like the
monarch.
Monarch. There we go.
Monarch of Ziri.
Yeah. And so they're talking about Monarch Albaran, I think. So they're outside this jump point, waiting for this ice hauler to come in, so that the people won't all fucking die of dehydration. And we're shown on Aranok, it's pretty rough, like water ration. Like she mentions how when the ice transport comes in, the ice is already spoken for everybody, so they're gonna need to find more. Some sabotage happens from the character's name starts with an S or a C. They're not important, so I've already forgotten.
I think it's Ziri, isn't it?
No, the Path of the Open Hand.
Oh, Serena or something like that.
Serena, that was it.
Yes, Serena.
So the first chapter starts with Serena and then leads into this thing where we see her kind of like screw with some programming.
She's a Kage,
What it
by
turns
the way.
Out to be is that, no, that's the other person.
Oh, is it? I thought both of them were.
Yeah. I don't remember.
I'll look into it.
I don't remember if you say where Serena's from, but. Yeah, but the other one, Oshi or something, Oba.
Yeah, it was a
Kage. Yeah, that person definitely is. But is it Kage or Kaga?
Kage. It's the guys from like the Clone Wars arc that were like ninjas.
Yeah, the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're called Kage.
The Ventress episode. Oh boy. Okay. So cool. So she might be a shadow. She might not be a shadow. We'll figure that out. But it turns out to be basically a plot where it makes one of the Iram. Aranok ships go out of control.
She was
and try to like attack Iram. This is also happening, a bunch of Republic ships drop out of the hyperspace point two and freak out the freighter who drops the ice. We will get to what they're doing here, but Ziri and the Irani general or the Iram general kind of try to work together to stop the fighter along with a Jedi. It doesn't quite work. The shuttle explodes, killing the guy, and Ziri ends up in Iram's ocean, where, as if the Force is guiding them, or perhaps it's also fate, the second character of this plot arc of... Oh god, why am I forgetting everyone's names already? Fano? Fanro?
Bro, I think... Fontoon.
Who is... as it turns out, the heir apparent for Iram, where Ziri is the Aranok princess. So Fontoon saves Ziri, and they don't trust each other at first, but maybe they'll learn to put aside their differences and work for the common good of their planets. Anyways,
I think the hardest part about us reading these books is that we listen to them, so we can't see the spelling. Fontoon's name is definitely. Spelled P-H-N-T-U.
What?
Yeah. And Ziri, remember that one? That's X-I-R-I.
I saw that one.
Yeah. X-I-R-I. Yeah, it's like some of these names are like, this makes sense Star Wars-wise. I just, when you hear it, it sounds different. Like, it sounds like a normal name, but it's spelled completely different. And I appreciate
it. It now makes
the,
sense why I can't find these
touch
names.
Of detail.
Yeah, that's fair. And so while that's happening, we get speaking of references that I'll bring up after this, we get I was not expecting a One Piece reference, but we get that with the introduction of the second plot line, and our main character, Gela Natai, who is practicing a skywalk, which is a also just like Skywalker.
Oh.
But it's a technique where you basically just walk on like horizontal or vertical surfaces with the Force. So we get her, and then there's a Mon Calamari Jedi, Enya, I think. Yeah, Enya Keen, I think, and yeah. Who's kind of like her, like, wants to learn more about her. And we learn through their first interactions that Gela has had a traumatic past mission, and that's why she's now here. Is she? I thought she was Mon Cala.
No, the one of the Chancellors is Mon Cala.
No, one of the Chancellors is Quarren.
He's a Quarren guy. He's from Mon Cala.
And I just looked up Enya Keen, and she's a female Jedi. I don't know. I'll take a look at some other characters and see if I can find Mon Cala.
Okay. So with them as well, I can't remember who the other guy, Mel Day, maybe? But there's two Jedi Masters there. One of them's name is Charro Roy, who is a Sirian, and I thought in the beginning was going to continue the habit of being a worthless Jedi Master. Turns out he's not.
Thankfully. Ellie Day is also the person on the cover, just a heads up. I realize that now.
I thought that was Gela Natai on the cover.
Nope.
Yeah, she has like two blades.
Apparently not.
What?
Oh, one second. One second. Gela's
got two purple lightsabers.
One second. Yeah. No. Yeah, that's the right person. That's Melly Day, the one on the cover there.
That doesn't make sense.
Oh, one second. Huh. Never mind. You're right. It's they put a picture of this character Gela Natai on there, but it's under the biography section. But the explanation is that they grew up together, and that's their picture of that person. So never mind. Ignore me.
Okay. But yeah, so basically we learn that the Republic, who currently in the past has two chancellors, has been looking at the situation and deciding whether or not they should get in and actually do something. So on one side, we've got Keon Greylark, who is the human chancellor, who's basically staying on Coruscant to like run things on her own. And then we've got the Quarren Chancellor, whose name is also escaping me.
Chancellor Mallo.
Mallo? Okay, yeah. Oh, yeah, you're right. Orion? Orion? Mallo or something like that? Yeah. But anyways, so Mallo has decided to just go straight there. He's the way they play him up is he's much more of like the thrill seeker and like the I can get stuff done without red tape Chancellor. So he's decided to drop out directly there to broker a ceasefire and a peace agreement and all this kind of stuff, and has the Jedi with them. They almost, you know, crash and destroy the Aranok fleet, but they manage to land on the moon instead. Gela defies orders, and this is why I thought that Charro Roy was going to be another worthless Sarian Jedi Master, because as they drop out, Gela sees what's happening with Ziri and the fighters, and is like, we need to help them. And Charro Roy's like, no, we should wait and see what happens. And it's like, what the fuck are you talking about? There are ships falling out of the sky, and you're saying to wait and see what happens? So Gela defies orders, goes and tries to help, kind of succeeds, kind of doesn't, and then comes back to report. On the only thing that's important on the moon is that they discover a cobbled-together jamming beacon that is stopping the planets from talking with each other. Destroy it and are wondering who it's from.
Iana or Lana per se is the Mon Calamari female who is the marshal of the Urono village on planet Aranor.
Yeah, I remember her, but I could have sworn in the beginning they do say that.
Yeah, I thought so too, but I'm looking through and I can't find another Mon Cala. I'll keep on looking, but
yeah, no worries. But yeah, so then from there they decide, okay, well, we need to figure out a way to have these two planets come together and realize that, you know, they need to work together for the greater good and to stop all this horrible violence. So what eventually becomes the plan is that they're like, well, the Paxian is technically neutral ground and we'll hover over this neutral ground moon and we'll invite the leaders to hold peace talks. And Mallo does actually have a good point. He points out that...
I have to bring up one thing. I don't know if you said this yet, but Master Charro Roy is a Sirian.
Yes.
Like, of course, the Sirian is the guy that's like, yeah, we don't need to deal with that. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I just realized that. I was scared he's going to be another useless Sirian Jedi.
I didn't put two and two together. Yeah. I didn't realize Sirian was the race, and oh my god, that's so funny.
Within that chapter, I was like, oh no, not again. Not please, another God. One.
sorry,
but No, no worries. But yeah, so they decided to do that and figure that out. At the same time, like I said, Serena, we're dealing with her plotline as well, because it turns out she's from the Path of the Open Hand. And they are very vague throughout most of the story on why they're here. But they do mention Dalna. They do mention how they're servants of the mother, but neither of them are children of the path yet. But it's two people. It's Serena and the Akage, whose name's, I think, like Adelia or Orion, or not Orion, sorry, Oba or Oshi. I can't remember. Neither of them are really very important. They also end up working with a Miri Allen, whose name is like Bixto or something like that. But the whole thing is just all these different wheels turning of like, what are the children, or what is the Path of the Open Hand up to? What are they trying to do? What's about to happen? And then the last storyline is with Kyung's son, the heir apparent, basically, of the Chancellor, who is Axel Greylark, who is this, like, if you took Han Solo and Lando Calrissian and had them do the fusion dance and then turn them up to like 15, basically. He's like the wild child. He's this, you know, playboy philanthropist. Well, not philanthropist, but playboy smuggler, billionaire, except he doesn't have his inheritance fully.
Yeah,
basically. So we first meet him in Coruscant level 2000 and something, where he's gambling some of his fortune away. He gets into a bad shape with this Utapauan cantina owner. Manages to kind of like shoot his way out, and then, well, he tries to start to, and then gets arrested by Coruscant guard. Gets brought back to his mother, who is basically like, there's a situation going on between Iram and Aranok. You have to go there and like be my representative, basically. So the next entire part is Ziri, Fantolin. I really need to like just see his name so I can get it stuck in my head.
It's like Pontoon, but it's Fan, like Fontu.
Oh boy.
Fontu. It's like Phantom, but Fontu. Fondu.
I'm just trying to find it on the list.
So near the end. Like it's brain. Like on the last little bit there, I think.
It's around second, Gerard, Salas, Reich.
Yeah, it's on the last little bit.
When?
Second last, third last person on the full list.
Unidentified Rodian patron?
No, next one.
Oh, there you go. Under episodes. Oh, I see it. Oh, Fantu's in. Okay. Oh yeah, Yoda's in this.
Remember him?
For one point. So Fantu's. So basically, Fantu brings Ziri to meet with his mother, you know, the queen regent of Iram, and they basically have a talk that's like, well, your dad, the monarch, is not going to agree to this, but we're willing to try if you're willing to be your father's representative, and. To that, Ziri's basically like, no, I'll go with you, but we have to try and call my father to attend this, otherwise it's not going to work. It's not going to work out the way you want it to. From there, we basically get all the parties coming together. The monarch is clear, like, I want to think of an archetype that is not corrupted Theoden, but he really kind of acts like that, where he's basically like this old doddering man full of hatred and like spite, and he's got his viceroy, who is like the Grima Wormtongue, except he's also an ancient old man, and also has a son, Rev, who he like is like, oh, he's the best guy ever, and everybody else just can't stand either of them. So that we got them causing trouble during their whole attempts at the peace summit. The peace summit itself turns into an airing of grievances. It's not about how can we make a peace summit work. It's just, look at all the terrible things you did. Yeah, well, you guys did this, so we're justified, for like 3 days. All the while the Jedi are just getting like, Gela is getting more and more frustrated. While this is happening, there's a couple of B plots, but I won't go through them because they're not super important. But one of them is, and I again can't remember this guy's name, because it sounds really similar to Zamacro, and Mark Thompson was using Zamacro's voice when he was speaking as him in the audio book.
Lieutenant, wasn't
he? No, the Lieutenant Garen or something.
It's like Zerani or Zerandi or something like that. But in my head, I just kept auto-completing it to Zamacro every time he spoke.
I will find it, so, and I will let us know.
Cigaru?
Sure.
Cigaru. That's the one. Yeah. Thank you.
So yeah, all like, there's a little bit of back and forth there, and I'm not gonna lie, it's a little bit weird because there's a whole thing where like he's trying to protect Ziri, and he thinks that she's being like young and naive, and I'm like, okay, I got it. You're the uncle mentor figure that is trying to like look out for the daughter he never had, and then right near the end, it like starts to steer into more of like I could be your husband and like protect you, and I was like, well okay, we had a good thing going here.
Yeah, he's like, don't stop. Marry him, marry yeah. me.
Yeah, I could do this better. And I was like, oh boy, buddy, no, I like you. Like, stop. This culminates in it basically the, oh shit, I don't think either of you are there. It literally is like something out of one of the JoJo's parts where a character is like, I could protect you and be your husband and shield you from all the world's evils. And then immediately after that conversation ends, he dies.
I mean, so yeah, more or less.
Legitimately, yes.
That is, yeah, yeah, and that happens to a JoJo's character in part 7. But I'm the only person who's gone to that point. So I'll give that to myself. I don't want to spoil anything. But yeah, that happens. We don't know who it is for quite a long time. What ends up happening is like everything boils over to a point, and Ziri, who is really, really trying, and she feels like she's the only person on her side that really wants to see the war end. Basically delivers an ultimatum, which is, look, I found records that say that our planets used to live in harmony hundreds of years ago because we shared rulers. We can do this again. I will marry Fantu, and we'll restart this. And that, like, kicks everything off in, like, a weird passive way, because the Aranox are like, no, we refuse. And then Ziri has one talk with her dad, and he's like, okay, I accept. And the Viceroy is like, oh, this is terrible, and then doesn't do anything for a while. So he does eventually, but then it kind of like slides into like, okay, how are we going to make this work and like get everybody to accept this marriage? So the like climb to part 3 is them visiting Aranok and like going over a bunch of things and learning a bunch of things about the culture and stuff like that. And they basically are like, okay, Ziri and Fantu will like visit a bunch of different cities all across the planet and like bring relief and aid. And show like, hey, this is what we're trying to do. We're trying to work together and kind of have the Republic as guardians, but not have them show an overt hand. So it doesn't look like it's the Republic trying to force these two planets to get along. So it's that for a lot, and all of the hardships and struggles that come of that, because the people don't accept them. And then, you know, at one point they're like, oh, you're trying to do this Montague and Capulet thing. No, you must be the fake princess. And it leads to another thing where there's an Aranok force that is fighting this Irem group that was shot down, and they don't know why. During that, Fantu falls into they call them scorpions, but scorpions have poison stingers, and these ones on Aranok don't have any poison.
No, but do you want to take a breath for a sec? There's so much happening.
There's so much to go through.
There's so much minutia.
We're like 3/4 of the way through.
I'm just waiting for you to go...
Yeah, but so he falls into this nest of scorpions. He like comes out, and that's like a sign to a bunch of these people that he's fire branded, which I mean, it's a weird thing because they're not poisonous. So why is it like a big feat? But anyways, they go to another place where they show up, and a bunch of these Irem guards are like there all of a sudden. They're like, we put bombs on all the people of this town. You two come with us if you don't want us to blow them all up. So I should also mention they went with Axel and Gela. And so Axel and Gela managed to get on the ship and free them, and in the process learned they're not Irem guards. They are Aranok traitors who have dressed up as Irem guards. And surprise, they're led by the Viceroy's son, Rev. So they have like a standoff where Rev's like, no, I'm going to do this because it's the right thing to do, and I hate all the other people. And Ziri's like, why don't you give peace a chance? And Rev's like, never! And then Axel shows up, gets punched in the face, and then when Gela shows up, Rev jumps out the window, and they're basically like, everybody's safe, it's all good. So from there, we kind of learn more of like, oh yeah, the Viceroy is definitely evil and all the blah, 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 all this other stuff. So we take a quick OVA where Axel and Gela go to this like random station, and he like goes to meet with this generic info broker, and then Gela has to fight in like a pit fight thing for a little bit. And we learn some, Axel's really shady, and they've been saying this like the whole time. And it's like, he's a shady boy. And it's like, okay, but you haven't showed us how he's a shady boy, but we're going to get to that. Because then they switch to Irem to like start off this like big wedding celebration and all this stuff. And oh my God, Ziri and Fantu the whole time have been learning that they actually both have huge crushes on each other, but they won't admit it because we need to keep the tension going until the wedding starts. But yeah, so like while all that's going on, everything starts to come to a head. The big kind of reveal is that the other Path of the Hander, or Path of the Open Hander, whose name I still can't remember, and it doesn't matter because she's about to die, tries to like do this poison thing. And we learn through that that, oh, the Irem side isn't as squeaky clean as they think, because the queen, so there's scorpions on both planets, but the scorpions that are on the sea planet, ironically, are actually gigantic and like hyper poisonous. And the queen has been like synthesizing this like super toxin out of them, basically. And she basically gave that to the mother for reasons unknown, because we need a different leveler for this part. And then reneged on the deal when she realized, like, oh my God, I'm selling poison to someone. And it's like, well, yeah, I mean, yeah, what did you expect? But anyways, the mother has one vial. She wants, like, four to apparently make it even. And so she contacts her inside man to, like, get the job done. And the inside man turns out to be Axel, who they've been, like, ramping up this entire time that he like thrives in chaos and loves it. So of course his nickname is Chaos. And it's like, okay. But yeah, so they go through a bunch of these things. While all of that is happening, Fantu realizes that like, oh my God, my mom's doing some evil stuff. So him and Axel go to the facility where they're making these poisons. Fantu destroys the samples, but Axel manages to pocket a couple before getting stung by one of the scorpions, ironically. Because I guess when you're destroying samples, you just let all the sample subjects run free. It's very strange how it happens, but it leads to him waking up and having this revelation of like, haha, now I have to do a heel turn. So he sets off this, he learns that the Utapauan that he had screwed over in the beginning has placed a bounty on him. So he places a beacon that is like announcing his location to like draw a bunch of bounty hunters there while he goes to blow up a bunch of like these shield towers that are like keeping Irem from being eroded, or the capital Irem city from being eroded into the sea. However, while he is like going to set that plan into motion, the thing that actually jogs his memory is he gets ambushed somehow by the Viceroy, because like we're told off screen that like Rev freed him and then like made him go hide, but then somehow the Viceroy just ends up on a different planet and like in Axel's room and like tries to kill him poorly. But instead Axel kills him, but he ripped apart Axel's therapy droid, which is the guy that's there. Quinn is, it's like a neat droid, but through that Axel basically runs away. Gela and the others kind of like find the pieces and put together, because he didn't delete the messages that he'd been making for whatever reason. So like, oh my God, realize, oh, he's a traitor. And so Gela runs off to confront him. We get the like showdown scene where Gela's like, you're not a bad person, and Axel's like, you can't stop me, don't make me, I would have loved you if you weren't a Jedi. And Gela manages to basically get the detonator away, except the plan's already in motion, so a bunch of the shield generator towers explode. At the same time, a bunch of these bounty hunters are like, have like arrived because Axel stashed the beacon in the palace, and they're like, well, it says that he's here, so he must be here, it couldn't be a trap. So they start to try and fight the Jedi while the wedding ceremony is going on, but Ziri and Fantu get married anyways, and then do a bunch of a fight. And then Rev shows up and he's like, I brought these drill ships and I'm here to kill everybody. And then Ziri's like, no, I have learned that I can beat him with the power of, I'm not a fucking idiot. So she gets in an Irem ship, flies up, baits Rev into literally just plunging into the ocean to die. And he does. And so she survives. And so it's all good. We finished everything. Everything's got a neat tied bow on it, because Axel, it looks like he's going to die, but then he doesn't, conveniently. And it looks like he might escape, but then he doesn't. And then he ends up on a prison ship at the very end of the book. And so the whole thing kind of like wraps up with it. The two chancellors talking and being like, well, maybe we can let your son go on, you know, maybe we can like fudge the rules. And Keon is like, no, you know what, I've given him too many chances, just, you know, he's on his own now. On the flip, the best ending is like Ziri and Fantu are just like, yes, we're happily married and we love each other. And oh no, what's really sad is our friend Gela, who said that she was going to stay here, has to leave. But other than that, everything's great. And yeah, Gela decides that she's like, I did say I want to stay here and help people, but I've decided instead that I need to be a Wayseeker before Orla Jireni does, so I'm going to do that now. And we do get a nice moment where the Syrian Charro Roy is like, if you want to do that, then I support you 100% of the way. And then it kind of cuts back to the mother on the Gaze Electric being like, it does not matter. My plan is proceeding all according to plan, even though I didn't succeed in anything in this novel. And as unless I'm forgetting something, that's basically it. It's just like, happy resolution. Stay tuned for next time, because we've got a poison version of the leveler, and it doesn't work in aerosol form, but, you know. Like, I'm skipping over a ton of plot points, because there are a lot of plot points that happen in this book, but unfortunately, they don't lead to anything. It's like playing a game, and it's like playing Skyrim. Like, you've got a main quest, and then there's, like, 17 different side quests that are all going on, but once you finish them, they don't relate back to the main story. So that's like a huge, huge chunk of this book, and it's why it kind of feels like it's dragging in certain points, especially in the beginning. I'll give a few final thoughts because I don't want to hog too much time. I mentioned at the beginning, the daggers that the Arano use are called Bane Blades. I get it. It's supposed to be like a good luck charm and also a symbol. They're these blades that are encrusted with jewels and daggers and all the, or jewels and like Moonstone hilts, and well, at least Ziri's is, and you know, it's all personalized to the person. However, what was bugging me through the entire story is in Warhammer 40K, the Imperial Guard's largest tank is called a Bane Blade. And I have known them to be Bane Blades since I was like 15. So to hear the words Bane Blade used over and over again, referring to a tiny knife, when in my head I keep picturing an 11-barrel death machine that can like crush space marines beneath its tread, was so weird to me. And it was just constantly me being like, oh, it's a knife. She used a tank? No, it's a knife. He threw the tank at his feet. No, it's a... Okay.
Well, the book's eventually fault. A Bane Blade, why would that be just called a tank? Come on now, that makes no sense. It's a blade.
There's got to be somebody in that room who's a Warhammer fan who's just like,
yeah, right?
Just maybe put things into the book.
Yeah, I would sprinkle the thing down. Well, I mean, you know, why is it called a tiger tank when it's clearly not a tiger, right?
But it is a tank.
Sure, but they were referred to as tigers in the battlefield, right?
Never mind then.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah. So it's naming conventions. But yeah, so that was just messing with me the whole time, where I was like, no, what? It's not. It's a big giant tank thing. But yeah, so that was kind of funny. Like we mentioned, it is very clearly just like a slightly twisted Romeo and Juliet story.
With a few side stories.
Yeah, with a bunch, yeah, so many. It bugged me a little bit at first that it was like, we come from opposite worlds and we look the opposite and everything we do is the opposite. But by the time they got to part three, I felt like it was starting to intertwine and come together well enough that it made sense. And so that stopped bugging me by around part three. But yeah, I've been prattling on for like 20 minutes. So how about you guys?
I find it funny that now Axel in the epilogue is just like, I'm gonna be the king of this prison that I'm on now, and I can take all these people. But oh my god, turn a corner, and who do I see? Gela Natai. Oh no, I'm in love. Oh, but I'm gonna be edgy and dark and carve her out of my heart. It's just like,
it was the way he
turned on a dime, where it's just like, oh, you're with the. How are you associated with the open hand? Some random thing. Oh, okay, and you have a scar that hurts every time, and I was like, okay, just you start off as being like, yeah, like you said, this mix of Han Solo and Lando, and now you're just mopey edgelord, like remind me of Kylo at this point now, and it's just like, my scar.
Dude, it was so much worse than carving Gela's name into his chest. He carved it into the food he was eating.
Yeah, it was like, and the whole time they spend like building up with him, it's just like, oh no, he doesn't like the Jedi because he thinks the Jedi killed his dad. What happened to his dad? Well, he was trapped under a fucking rock, and things were happening, and they had to leave, so a Jedi pulled him up. Yeah, so I hate the Jedi because of that. I was like, if that's not the weakest bullshit I've heard in a long time,
it was like a Sophie's Choice situation, then I can understand it.
Yeah,
you know,
like I get he was a kid-ish at the time.
Yeah.
And but it's just like, when you go home, you went home and blamed his mom for sending them on the mission to a thing. It's just like, okay, so that's your reasoning for joining the open hand?
Yeah,
because they didn't save my daddy too?
Yeah.
And then you can turn around and say, it's like, oh, you know, but what's another just suffering boy in the galaxy? And
I mean,
you said it yourself.
Child trauma is a thing. I can understand why he'd blame her.
It is.
As a kid.
It is.
And it's just like, that's yeah, you're gonna lash out where... because you have nowhere else and don't know how to handle that, right?
But there's the moment where he reconciles it and he's talking with his mom and he's just like, okay, I don't actually think it's
but
your
she'll never
fault.
Forget
like,
that moment.
I'm a better person than that. And then turns out it's like, no, you're not. You're working with the fucking with the Nihil, basically.
I knew that he was gonna work with them as soon as he said, like, oh, I hate the Jedi. And I'm like, oh, open hand right here.
It's such a weird dichotomy because they take the like parental trauma that doesn't really make a lot of sense, and they hoist that one up as being like the giant grand one.
Yeah.
And then they take the one that does make a lot of sense and like, yeah, but we haven't reconciled it, but like we understand.
We're good. Yeah.
And I was like,
Yeah, I actually liked his character at first, and then it's like,
me too.
Yeah,
and
he was a very interesting character.
I'm just
with
like,
his
okay,
Q on
well,
Android.
Axel, you're done. Oh, Quinn was awesome. I kept seeing it hit him as AZ in my head.
Yeah.
The medical droid. Yeah. And it's just like, yeah, because he floats around and he hops around, but it's like a very
probe.
Simplified version of AZ.
Like a slightly big, like almost like the ID-10 droid.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I saw it, but yeah. No, it's interesting. I mean, the one thing I would say is, I wish it was easier for me to get into, like, because when you established a book in, like, you know, normal original trilogy, it's so easy to know where people are, what it looks like, who these people are, all this stuff. All you got to remember is names and who they are. In this, it's like brand new planets, brand new conflict, brand new, like, chancellors, brand new characters, brand new Jedi. Everything's new. So it took me half the book, maybe.
I get it.
Like,
yeah.
Just up to the point where he came to the like the peace talks, then I finally got to the point where I was like, okay, now I know most people's names.
Well, I thought they did a decent job of world building. The only thing that I found very weird is just like, did everybody forget they called Utapauans Powans?
Yeah, I didn't realize that.
Like when he kept calling the start Uta, so I thought it was a completely different species. Like, you know, the singing thing from
One Piece.
From episode 6,
Oh god,
I thought it was that for the longest time. Then it's just like, oh, from the Utapau girl, and I was like, so call them Powan. You've been calling them Powan for years. What is this now? I was like, that's a really weird change to make.
Yeah,
for the Uta female, it's like, no, the Powan female, and I know exactly what you're talking.
Exactly, yeah.
Mm. So that was just, I was like, somebody didn't do their homework. At that point, was the only thing I thought, but.
Yeah, but and to that kind of point as well, like, that's the reason why, and it almost bugs me, but I still feel justified in it. But it's why I can't remember anybody's names, despite the fact that I finished this book today.
Yeah,
is because again, we're in the past. I know that none of these people live into the main series, right? I know that none of these people are around in part one. So why am I supposed to feel attached to any of them outside of Porter Engel? Right.
And the hardest part is because for us to remember them, we would remember them a lot easier if we read it, like physically with a book, because you get to read the name over and over and over and over again.
Sure, but in audiobooks for part one, I remembered everybody's name.
Yeah.
That's the main thing is like I hear these people and they try to get me invested and all this talk about them. I'm like, this is nice. Irem and Arano have never shown up in part one. So why do I care about any of these people?
A trick I've been using for that is I've completely separated it from anything part one or so. I'm just seeing it as like, here we go, High Republic. And then just like try to eliminate the phases from my head.
Yeah, it's just that's all fair, one right? big...
It's easier to just see it as like, okay, here we go.
It's just, to establish something when you have no idea where we are. We know it's near Dalna-ish.
Well...
like these planets.
A good way to see it is like we've been playing a lot of Empire at War, so I've been seeing a lot of the galaxy map. Granted, it's small, but like I'm looking at it just from like the whole forest, and like you see all the dots where all the planets should be, and I'm just like, okay, it's High Republic time, so everything in that outer half of the rim eliminate, and that's where the galaxy is right now. Those planets are still there, we just don't know them. So in between, like something like the areas of Tatooine, Eriadu, Hoth, Naboo, everything that's on that outer rim kind of stuff. I'm just like, these planets are all dotted somewhere between them. So when they talk about traveling and stuff like that, I'm just like, okay, so how long would it take to travel from Tatooine to Coruscant?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Something like that. Like sending out dozens of Pathfinders and not hearing anything and sending out dozens of this. And it's like, okay, yeah, we're trying to colonize the Outer Rim. And that really doesn't happen properly till they put up, Starlight Beacon for as long as it lasted. Like, you see the idea behind, like, okay, we sent out Pathfinders. The Pathfinder thing isn't working. So between phase two and phase one, you can see like, well, we've tried a thing and it didn't work. So we're just going to set up a huge ass space station and send people from there.
Yeah.
The progress is there for some things. So I'm just like, you know, it's making more sense. It's phase two. And it's starting to make a little bit more sense to me where it's just like, you're showing your trial and error. You're showing how diplomacy is working in this era. And what it means, like, I thought they were doing a really good job this time of trying to destroy Noma's preconceptions. Yeah. Like, we see here, yes, it's a Syrian Jedi Master who's effective.
Yeah.
Okay. And then a Quarren fucking Chancellor of the Republic.
Yeah. Who's, and he's not a evil dickhead.
Yeah. And he's actually a good guy who just wants to get shit done with his hands-on work.
I was thinking about that the other night as I'm reading it. I'm just like, man, I can't wait. Like, I want to hear what Noah has to say about this guy. Yeah. He's like, nothing negative. You can't. The only thing that pissed me off was early in the book when, as you're saying, you know, there's the stalemate. They're waiting for the ice drop. The Jedi ship that's supposed to be there with medical supplies shows up. And then another Republic. And then he has the balls to say when they're meeting together, they're all like, you guys don't think that was my fault? It's like, yes. Yes,
yeah,
exactly your fault. You shouldn't have been here. Who's clogging up the hyperspace lanes? My ass.
Yeah, yeah.
You shouldn't be here.
I love the part too when
he was talking to them
and he was like, when they were like talking about the marriage and stuff like that, he's like, yeah, we can have a whole bunch of people come out and view the wedding. So many people from all the galaxy want to come out, all these leaders. And then Ziri was like, oh, but also, like, you'll need to take sanctions off the hyperspace lanes. And he's like, oh, shit, I forgot how to do that. Because he's like, yeah, we need to have trade come back here. And it's like, you can't do that without sanctions being removed. And you're like, yep, I just walked myself into a corner. It's so funny. It's just like the small things that way.
Yeah, at the same time, though, we only put the sanctions in place because
of the war.
Their war was fucking things up. So it makes
absolutely
sense.
Absolutely. I just thought it was funny because you get to see, like, he's a very high-tier politician, the highest tier you can be. But he also fucks up, and you're like, okay, here we go.
It's a choice.
Yeah.
No, peace is a choice.
No, peace is a choice, yeah.
Like, I liked seeing that just from, like, how badly he wanted his diplomacy to work. So he's, like, practicing in front of the mirror with his droid, not realizing, it's like, dude, you're picking a side with what you're wearing because you're wearing all blue. What?
Yeah, that was.
But it goes with my eyes, though, world. And it's just like you're talking about peace is the choice, and objectively reflecting, like, yeah, I'm with the blue team, not the red team. Yeah. It's like, what? Come on, man.
Yeah, the only other moment that I thought was, and I didn't even hate it, but it was weird to me because it was such a snap change. Mm-hmm. Is he officiates the wedding between Ziri and Fantu.
Yeah,
and like when the bounty hunter fighting like starts, he's like, "Oh, maybe we should like stop." And Zero's like, "Don't you fucking dare! Like, we're finishing this. I don't care what happens." Right. And he's like, "Oh, okay, I guess." And then as soon as it fucking ends, he gets tossed a blaster and ices a bounty hunter. Yeah. I was like, "Well, why were you scared, bro?"
I didn't have a blaster in his hand, that's why. I didn't have a gun at this point. He gave me a gun, so I shot somebody.
it also makes it hard for me because every time I heard his name and he was talking stuff, I pictured a Mon Cala. And I don't know why.
Because at the beginning
of the book, man. I heard Mon Cala, and then I heard his name, and I must have like zoned out for like 5 minutes. And my brain's like, oh, he's Mon Cala. Okay, cool. So yeah, it's fun to think that he was actually Quarren. That's actually pretty cool.
I think it was cool. The only thing that I was laughing at is the fact that, like, oh, we need two chancellors. Why? Yeah, so I think one it's can interesting. Stand Coruscant, can one can roam the thing. It's just like, yeah, but you clearly see them. It's just like if they told both the liberals and the conservatives to run the country together, and it's one just like, yeah, well, I'm gonna do it. I don't need to ask for permission. Don't tell them.
I think it's interesting because they work in tandem together, right? Like one is able to do the politics, whereas one is able to do like actually have a picture or a presence. Sorry, out in the galaxy. to be able to, like,
has a podcast, man, on the Holonet. I'm kidding.
But that's what I mean. Like, when you're in person at this, like, peace treaty thing, it makes it, it brings more weight to it than being like, I'm a hologram. Hello. You know, yeah, like,
I understand. Yeah. I understand what you're saying. But at the same time, then counselor or chancellor on Coruscant's being like, oh, it's almost election season. It's like, so what are you worried for? Like, if he wins, you win too. No, both of you were there anyway.
It's, I think one,
like,
can be voted out, right?
I guess. It's just like, they still have terms. Like, they still, they can't. But then again, Valorum was chancellor for a long time.
And so was Palpatine. Yeah. For, well, a Palpatine, very long time.
There wasn't any voting during that time. And it was only 3 years, remember?
It was. It was just bought out. 10, and there, like, was emergency votes.
More emergency powers. Yeah. More emergency powers. Yeah, thanks, was... thanks, Jar Jar.
It was a single term into a government change.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
But no, I think it, but, was, you know, it was solid.
This book did a lot for the High Republic, though.
I think it gave a lot of perspective for phase two, the High Republic.
One thing that I found really fucking funny, though, was, like, as they're, because your description of the monarch Albaran as crippled Theoden was so fucking spot on. Because
he lost his wife and he lost his son.
I'm thinking about it, right? And when they show up to their meeting and the queen, bless her heart, sitting right in the middle of the floor, being like, you gotta look at me when you walk in. and he comes in, it's like Hogwarts, Harry Potter 4, when everybody's coming into the Great Hall doing their things, and, like, you know, the Beauxbatons girls do their dance and they go through. And then the guys from Durmstrang start marching, and you're hearing the boots on the ground and everything like that. It's like,
Durmstag. Yeah.
It's like, okay, put your weapons on the thing. No. And it's just like, oh, well, the Jedi still have their lightsabers. And it's just like, well, our lightsabers are an extension of ourselves. So, like, we can't, well, our Bane blades are extensions of ourselves. And Gilla can legit feel the masters being like, this motherfucker.
Yeah. I mean,
just say that.
I mean, yeah. Fair enough. It's like Mandalorians being like, this is part of my religion.
And I was just like, wait, what, Jedi, why do you care? If anything, you should be happy somebody else has that kind of sense. How dare he?
Give them your lightsabers, because you can just pull it over with the force. Like, no issues, you know?
I did also realize a more apt description of the monarch is if corrupted Theoden and halfway through Return of the King, Denethor did the fucking fusion dance.
Oh my god.
Because you've also got the, my son.
Yes, yeah, that's what I was thinking. Denethor,
my son.
That's who I was picturing when you said Theoden for some reason, but yes, daughter, you're right.
I'm going to blow your planet up until nothing but
exactly.
I was like, man.
He will slag this world.
You're not even getting in the ship. If you were like 40 years old and pissed off and ready to slag the planet yourself, I would have been like, this guy's okay.
He was like Denethor, mess with him.
But yeah, legit, Denethor is sitting there like, I'll burn your planet. It's like, you ain't gonna do shit.
That's literally who I pictured this entire time.
What you're gonna do.
We need conclusive evidence. We need to see the monarch eat the tomato.
Cherry?
Yes, yeah, just like eating it like an apple.
Nah, man, like in the most disgusting way to eat a cherry tomato.
Yeah, man,
running down your chin and all kinds of shit. Disgusting.
Oh my god.
But if you had a favorite character from this, I know, like, you're trying not to get attached, or you can't get attached to these characters, but I thought a lot of them were really well fleshed out for the most part in this story. If you had to pick one, I feel like it would be tough because there were a lot of strong characters in this.
That's a good point. Yeah,
I would have said I would have said the son of the Chancellor until the face turn. Yeah.
Oh, Axel. Yeah.
Yeah, he was great, but not my favorite after that.
Mine's a tie. Okay. And I'm trying to think of which one, because I really liked Ziri.
Ziri was great.
I thought how forward she is and how just, like, I'm not going to let a single
female character.
Yeah, seriously. It is, I am not going to let a single fucking thing stop me.
Yep.
Without good reason. I will do whatever it takes to achieve peace without becoming a monster.
Mm-hmm.
I really, really like that. I also, even still, I didn't like the heel turn, but I still really like Axel.
Interesting.
Okay.
I love this idea of a character who is like, it does not matter what's happening, I thrive on chaos. I just need it constantly.
Yeah, he's literally just gambling his life at this point.
Yeah, it's...
Well, they gave us hints in the beginning, right?
Absolutely.
It's just like, the logical thing to do is get up from the table, you want a bunch of money.
Your droid's telling you to stop.
Get up and leave.
Yeah.
No, I'm gonna go for it again. and then manipulate the winning thing with, because my dice can move on their own.
It's a creature or whatever, yeah. Like a beetle. Yeah,
the two things it reminded me of is a more sane Joker from Dark Knight Rises, or Dark Knight, The Dark Knight, sorry.
We live in a society. We live in a galaxy. Joker.
Yeah, that's the joke. That's Joker, with Joaquin Phoenix. But yeah, because it was like, it was the, I'm an agent of chaos.
Yeah.
I don't care what's happening. I don't even care if I die. I need this. It's just, it's more, much more sane.
Right? It makes like the world, it makes the galaxy a more interesting place for him.
I got one. Yeah.
And they gave, in the Chancellor gave him all of his inheritance too. So like, he has no, he can just go do whatever he wants.
Well,
yeah. But to reference the movie again, some people aren't interested in money.
No, but he can use that to whatever end he wants.
You know, he was going to use it to support that open hand though.
Oh yeah. Well, as soon as he was like, I'm going to go, like, I hate the Jedi. I'm like, absolutely. This guy is going to go fund the open hand as the Chancellor's son. Of course,
because the red herring was, you know, oh, I'm going to buy all the things money can buy and have this and a yacht and a pleasure thing and everything like that. It's just like, no, I'm going to improve the gate's electric and I'm going to do all this other stuff. It's going to be great.
Yeah, I'm curious to see where it goes from here.
Yeah,
I wanted more Fontu backstory, where it's just like, yes, I know that the queen and her consort like adopted you after what happened with your parents and getting swept out to sea and everything like that. But his manners impeccable. This guy, fear of flying, but still stuck through it and everything like that. Like, it was like he was just like, he's what a prince. I always imagine, like, can you imagine if you found out you were a prince, and then with everything you've been through, everything you learned, and then you're in that position, and then you have some chancellor guard guy being like, no, fuck the people, just come back into the house. He's like, are you kidding me?
We also,
I'm gonna help them. I'm gonna walk out there and help them, be a part of them. I am them, kind of thing. Like, I really respected that about him.
I think
the other thing, it's nice how it comes full circle to the very end of the wedding when he uses that of being like, I'm from here. You knew my mother. I know you don't want to leave, but you're all going to die if you don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was like, that's really cool payoff. He's almost like this time or this part of history's Luke Skywalker, just kind of like pure good.
Yeah. He was an interesting character. I think the interesting thing about his family too is like, he has two mothers, and it wasn't like it was done properly. It was mentioned, it was shown, things were happening.
Technically, he has three mothers.
Yes, but like...
we're not going there.
Two adoptive mothers, right? And I think that was done really well, because we've had, you know, stuff in Star Wars where it's just not done properly, because it just wasn't thought out fully. Mm-hmm. But I thought this was definitely done that way. And he was an interesting character. They both were pretty interesting characters as well.
When you say they both, who are you talking about?
The mothers, like the consort and the queen. I think they were fine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's what I meant by three. Okay. Biological
and then the two, yeah. The other two. Yeah. But no, I thought that was pretty good. And then, for a favorite character, it's got to be the, I think it's Ziri, honestly. Because, overall as a character, strong character, very, very well done, like, princess, but also warrior type character. With strong sense of,
I like the fact that they made it clear, especially with her, and to go on with that was just like, you know, she was promoted. Oh, you got me saying some macro now, bro.
Yeah.
Sorry, it's a mind worm.
It doesn't help that they're really close names.
Sigaru should have been promoted.
You call him Jared. His name's Jared. Jared Sigaru.
Supposed to be promoted, but then princess, but she's Xena instead of Ziri.
Essentially.
So, you know, she's going to be there, but she was competent and she tried hard for her people and everything like that. And so he became like the fun uncle while she had to do the tough job. And that poor Blitz kid, where it's just like, I joined because my sister got screwed over a thing. And like, you just happen to have the ship that got the hacked droid with it.
God, yeah.
Like that whole scene made me really upset, only because it was like, okay, you're joining. But you don't really want to fight people. You don't really want to hurt anybody. Your mom wanted to see Irem. You wanted to see Irem, but the war and everything. You don't hate them. You don't want to kill them. Oh, look, you're in a murder ship. Oh, murder ship stop? Okay, it's just going to blow up. Yeah. Like I was relieved when they stopped it, and it was like, oh, it exploded.
Yeah.
How? Yeah, why? Like, what? Fuck. It was just like, God damn it. And it's like, that, what are his last thoughts? His last thoughts were his mom. I was like, you.
Yeah, you son of a bitch.
Damn you,
yeah.
Author. I
he
was
just
like,
wanted to make
why?
Sure his mom was good and that she was happy. And it's like, oh my God, that hits hard.
I was like, that was so cruel. I was like, oh my God. That's
that
was, right.
Blight's
I was
heaven,
emotionally
right?
invested in the story. Yes.
Yeah.
Blitz. Blight's heaven. Yeah.
The moment I realized that, I was like, okay, this is some good writing in this book, is then a little bit later, they try to do the same thing with Serana, who's the person who got him killed.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, well, you know, it's just I had to be here because I hated my planet. My parents didn't accept me. I was like, shut up.
Yeah. You have no right.
Like,
yeah.
Immediately, I was like, no.
Oh my
Get
God.
Fucked. And then, yeah, and then when she dies, I was like, good. She good dies look. Off screen, too.
Yeah.
Yep. So it's just like, yeah, you fucking get what you deserve.
You know,
deserve
actually, who my favorite character is on this? My favorite character is the Tordarian from the gambling part at the very beginning.
Oh my God. The one in the prison.
Yeah, the one that was just like, hey, yeah, yeah. What are you doing, buddy? It's like, oh my fucking God, what is happening right now? Oh my God. No. Just jokes. But yeah, that was the prison was fucking hilarious.
Mom, I just
want to
take a shower. No, we got to talk in front of all this water.
Yeah.
Can I not take the shower first? No, we're going to talk. Oh my God, go away, you stink.
It's like, yeah, get the fuck out of here.
Outside of that species, we get a reference to a Lasat at one point.
Oh, do we? I didn't catch that.
Yeah, he doesn't have hands anymore.
Oh, I missed that completely.
Because he's a Lasat bounty hunter who kills Mickey and Jedi.
Oh.
With his like bow thingy, and then Char Real Roy fucking cuts off his hands.
During
the wedding thing.
That sucks.
Yeah,
I forgot about that.
He like kills this Mickey and Jedi, and Char Real Roy is like, "Oh, you rest peacefully on a friend." And then just one move just
she
takes off his
hands,
and you don't even see what else happens to him.
She does the Dooku.
Char
Real
Roy.
Yes, sorry.
But yeah. So there's a Lasat. There's a Twi'lek, which is only important because we do learn at this point in the galaxy that they were still kind of divided.
Yeah.
The prison or the holding cell captain guy.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's a Zygerian at the end. In
Zygerian
the prison
scum.
Yeah. I'll go deal with them myself.
Yeah. It's like, Anakin, I think you should sit this one out, my friend.
And then, like Dan said, there's a Mon Calamari living on the desert world, which is interesting.
Yeah, that's kind
of
fucking
suck. We get a couple Pantorans, a couple Mirialans.
Yes, we do get some Mirialans, because I think, was it...
There was the Mirial
Axel that was like, oh, I like her face tattoos. Or who was that?
She was sitting
next
to
the bar.
Playing
gambling with him.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, and they were like flirting at the very beginning. Yeah, yeah.
Well, she was.
Yeah, she was, and he wasn't
and then
interested.
Like, you kind of like are a Jedi. And it's like, what the fuck you say to me? It's like, oh, that's for that. That's why that did that. Yeah.
And then there's a Miri Allen who Axel and the Path are working with, named Binot or
nice.
Something. He's like another smuggler.
Nice.
Binot Ulio or Ulo
yeah.
or something.
So it's interesting. We get a nice little smattering of different races.
Yeah.
Which to me is like you're still galaxy building for the time and everything like that. Being like, well, all these races and different aliens are here, but like it's the galaxy is diverse.
They also mentioned
like,
the
we're still
Civil
trying
War.
To find planets.
Mon Calamari Civil
yeah,
War, they mentioned
them
too.
Well, it's not gonna be the last one.
No, but I mean they mentioned it at least. There's like events going on around the galaxy, so that's kind of cool.
And that's part of Mallow's motivation is that he's like, there's a Quarren, and I've lived through a civil war, so I don't know what I'm talking about.
That was one of the funny things I liked too, because not the war, but like you know, they're going around the ship. It was Gela and Enya going around the ship trying to find a thing to send a message out to Coruscant to the council, and they're just like, okay, it's a long beam. We travel on a long beam. It's gonna be the same. This is an aquarium. Where did this come from? It's like, oh, and then Enya is like, oh, do you think the chancellor's homesick? And I was like, fuck, he probably is. Like, it's a whole water planet. You gotta go around and trying to find different places. Like, I can't imagine him being on Arano and just being like, well, this sucks.
Yeah, that would suck.
And
ass.
Yeah, he does mention at one point he was really excited to see Irem.
Yeah, I can imagine. He's like, oh my God, I've been living across the pond on this one for so long.
You did also, Ed, remind me of the only other like thing that bugged me in this book, though, which is that the Paxian has no fucking security. It's a goddamn shit show.
Yes, it
there
is.
There are two There are
mission to Alderaan.
Well, you didn't bring a fucking guard. There are two murders on board that ship, and nobody sees a fucking thing. There's someone crawling through the vents.
There's such a joke.
Yeah, it's like, and it's like a path of the open hand person. Where's
Cigaru? Sat on your bed? What?
What happened?
Yeah, no, I was thinking the same thing.
This?
Some dude jumped out an airlock and nobody noticed.
Yeah, like, he just died. Like,
what's happening?
Just like, why?
Yeah, legit, after talking to the Viceroy, it's just like, go kill yourself. Okay, cool, yes.
Speaking of which...
For the children, yes.
Speaking of which, why did he die?
I don't know. I never got that.
No idea why he killed himself.
Yeah, they found him around the moon. They mentioned it off the cuff. They're like, yeah, we found this guy around the moon.
They were trying to blame it on like the Iron Me delegation. Yeah. Like, who from there was gonna shove him out of airlock without anybody noticing?
Yeah, it was weird.
He just talked to his viceroy. What happened?
Yeah, that was the one thing where I was like, what happened to that plot point?
Yeah, why?
The only reason I think they did that was to show
or Erido, and then he just fucking ejects himself.
I think that was to show how unhinged what the hell is his name?
Denethor.
No, not Denethor.
Oh, the other guy, that's right, sorry.
Yeah, like to show how crazy and how just obsessed with the war that he was.
Denethor
Grim
of Wormtongue.
Denethor 2, basically, because they were both...
It was essentially Grim of Wormtongue, wasn't it?
Denethor and Théoden, you could say, because Théoden was the monarch and Denethor was this dickhead.
There you go.
Oh, true.
Where it's just like, you know, crazy and the true children of Arrenal.
Yeah. Give it the times, Grandpa.
What anyway. Are they called? The scorpions? The like Filefire or Thylefire?
Yeah,
or whatever?
Filefire.
Yeah.
It's like, yes, we gonna sting you. It's just gonna hurt real bad.
Ow. Like fire.
We're gonna hurt you so bad. You wish we didn't gonna hurt you so bad.
Yeah.
Okay.
But again, they don't sting, and so like, what's the why? Why name your house after an animal that doesn't have the main danger thing?
It does fire ant stuff.
Like if I named myself after a whip scorpion, like cool. It sounds neat, but they don't have any stingers.
Hey man, they can't choose their species that they have on their planet.
Yes, they can.
They have no other predators of any kind. That's
just
all I got.
For visual representation, when they kept saying the gorge back home for the Irono delegation, I kept thinking of in The Mandalorian when the huge bird thing picks up the kid and flies.
Yeah.
Oh, it's like, okay. So I kept seeing that and I was just like, yeah, we practice in that thing. And I was just like, man, that's just like Beggar's Canyon on Tatooine.
Yeah.
he's coming up with all these. It's like, it's for visual, I hope it looks nothing like those and it's its own thing. Man, it's hard to not see both those places. Like
they also, and this is so minor, I don't think it matters at all, but they at one point I think it's Gela and Enya talking, and Enya's like, oh, you look like a Loth bat, and I was like, is Loth the only place that's allowed to have animals?
Yeah
Loth, everybody bat, loves Loth cat, things Loth, like Loth cats.
It pissed me off because, like, if you remember in season 7 or no, season 5 actually of Clone Wars, there's a quote unquote Lothcat on the streets of Coruscant just chilling.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Ventress gets faked out because she thinks it's Ahsoka coming back to the Doctor, and it's a Lothcat. And I'm just like, this is before we knew Lothal was a place.
Yep.
Yeah.
What? So, what did we call this thing beforehand? Has it been erased?
It was
from
unidentified
memories?
Kitty cat until it was established.
Yeah, it's the to be named here cat.
Yeah.
You're right. Loth wolves, loth cats. And I was like, yeah, it's the only place that has animals. Yes.
Yeah.
You guys ready to get into the rankings?
Yeah.
Let's do it. All right. Welcome to the rankings of the episode. Thank you for holding on this long with all the plot points we had to go through and all the different things we talked about. But this is the moment where we decide out of 10 what we give it based on our experience with it and other books that we've read up to this point. So let's start with Ed.
Yeah. Oh, God, my numlock is off again. Thanks, Autorun.
It's a upwards arrow out of 10.
I'm giving it an 8. Just I didn't expect to enjoy it as much as I did. Yes, the beginning can be slow, but slow in the sense where, like, they're still doing a lot of, they had to do a lot of world building for both IRNO and IRM. Like, they had to do that. They had to set up why there was the war, why everything was about. Once they got that out of the way and the intrigue popped into it with the twists and turns and all that, like, I found myself thoroughly enjoying it. I wish I had more time to listen to it at a decent pace, because after a while I started sprinting through it. Then for the last bit, I just legit found a file to read the rest of it. But it's one of the books that I will go back to, surprisingly, from the High Republic. There's only a few. I would say Light of the Jedi is just one, because like it wasn't terrible. It's just the beginning of it to read. Into the Dark is one I can go back to at any point, just because of how damn good that one was.
Have you gone back to anything of the High Republic yet?
Yeah, those two in particular.
Really? You've reread them?
Light of the Jedi, just to get some things and just to get some of my ducks in order, just because I was just like, I think I'm messing something up here. I'm not sure. So I went back to read the whole thing again.
Very nice.
Then Into the Dark, just because I wanted to read something.
I just can't wait.
Convergence is going to be one of those as well, I think. Nice. I don't know yet. Cataclysm is the next one I'm looking really forward to.
Some of the big like novels like for like the mainstream audience of readers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because we have two big ones coming up, so if it's continuing on this vein, like...
Yeah. I'm definitely for The Blade, the Charles Soule comic series The Blade of Bardotta.
But Zoraida Cordova has set a bar where it's just come on now. Hit this at least. Mm. If you can't, don't bother.
Yeah. I think
it'll
be interesting to see where the next few books get us. How about you, Noma? What did you give this?
So this is really interesting to me, because I'm really torn. It's like wavering between a 7.5 and an 8, because on one hand, there's a lot of stuff that made me interested in the characters and actually care about some of the characters. That's why I didn't need to think when I was trying to remember Ziri and Axel.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, it's so slow to start and pick up, and there's so many things that don't
most
go anywhere.
Are, though. Like for the Star Wars books, like I would say, like it's usually like the first third of most books.
Treat it like now that you know everything, just skip right to part two.
Absolutely.
But it's the fact that it's like two thirds of the book,
yeah,
and like so many of the plot points just don't go anywhere.
It took me a long time to get used to it too.
The final thing in my head that made me tip this to an 8 overall, is the fact that, like you said, Ed, this makes me interested in part two, and Path of Deceit did not. And I didn't think anything, honestly, was going to make me interested in part two. Because, as I've said, one of my giant issues is the fact that why should I care about any of these characters? Because they're not around in 150 years. However, the fact that I do actually care about these characters, and I did actually feel something when one of them died, I think that's what pushes it to 8 for me. This is like it did. There, kind of like you said, you'd come back and read it. Mm-hmm. It left a lasting impression on me.
Interesting.
And that is definitely worth a lot.
Nice. It's always the books that we never expect. Eh?
Yeah.
Alphabet Squadron, Twilight Company.
Alphabet Squadron was legit. Like, Twilight Company was probably one of the best we've read.
But that's it. Going into it, I don't give a fuck about the Republic.
And that was near the beginning.
Whatever.
Yeah. That was the beginning of insane. Canon. Like that was like. Maybe a year in to the new Disney canon. Alexander Freed hasn't come back yet to do Star Wars. I'm like, dude, you need to come back and do more.
Nah, he left as a hero. Just leave it at that.
No. He needs to do the Timothy Zahn trilogy or something. Some X-Wing or some sort of trilogy would be great.
Well, you know, we might still end up getting some sort of Rangers, maybe in novel form instead, like how they did the X-Wing series. Because when you think about it, if you go back and watch 4, 5, and 6, like Wedge is a big character now, but he didn't really have a. It was like the Boba Fett to me. He didn't have a lot going on in those movies at all.
Where's the books he did, right?
Books were insane for him. Like,
he's basically the leader of Rogue Squadron.
Yeah.
For Luke.
And then he does become. Well, yeah, so it's like
he becomes
Luke
Rogue One.
Yeah. And so it's him and Luke kind of trading places for a whole bunch of it. And then as Luke slowly transitions more into Jedi Master.
Yeah, he takes over.
Wedge just seamlessly takes over.
Nice.
Yeah, back to wars and stuff like that. Oh,
mm-hmm.
Amazing.
I guess my rating on this one is actually lower than yours. 7.5.
Really?
Yeah. Cool. I don't know. I think I might have to re-listen to the last like third of this book just to kind of reprocess what happened for the second time. But as it ended and the way it ended, I think it was, it does set up for some interesting stuff to happen potentially.
Well,
but
this is the, sorry, I'll let you finish and then I'll come up with something. Because the rub for me is just like a lot of these characters still have a chance to come back. Like the mother, I didn't expect to hear from them for a while.
Yeah, me
and
too.
It's like the second book ends, like here they are again, and the gay's electric and everything. I was like, oh god,
we hear nothing
and
of the other characters. Like
they have all Yana these connections whatever, right? established where I thought they were just breaking into the galaxy. I didn't realize they had tendrils everywhere already.
Yeah, I think this is like a couple months after the end of the last book. I have to look at the timeline, but yeah, I think it is.
So it's like Axel could be freed from that prison by the pre-Nihil or whatever. He could go back into the galaxy. Now that Gela's a way seeker, they could potentially run into each other again if the Force makes them clash yet again. Then it's just like, how's the difference? What's going to happen? This is like, there's a lot of open-ended things that could happen. But like, I not that I was hoping to get really interested in phase two and just the High Republic in general. Like, I don't know, like the way I feel pulled to it. And I want something from this. It's in our lifetime. I want them to deliver a good story, something I can see, maybe not on par with Legends, but something like almost the pseudo Legends of this time. And I want to be drawn into it. I want to be interested.
Yeah.
I want to read and get more out of it. And if they continue these kinds of stories where it's just like, yeah, it's 150 years. You could tell a full story and then some about these characters and give them a good ending. And then we go into part one where we can be pissed off with Stellan Geos and all that kind of stuff. Like,
it's gonna
get what the... Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's going to be interesting because last phase we read them as they came out. This way we are reading them one after the other, like there is like no gap essentially apart from the next recording. We're not doing High Republic spoiler alert, but yeah, it's going to be interesting to see the difference in that as well, because we don't have to wait and remember like what was this, who was this person, what happened here, or like where does this hit sit in the timeline for this, like how many years passed, that kind of stuff. We'll be getting it like one after the other after the other. I think the one challenge is we're going to be doing it alongside the Bad Batch. So we're watching Bad Batch and doing High Republic at the same time, which is going to be interesting. So, and then I just say like with the last little bit of this, there was like, I think I'm ready to move on from the like forbidden like love sort of trope that we've delved into quite a few times. Like I'm glad we
welcome.
Like I'm glad it's happened. But again, it's like we've had this one after the other after the other. I think we've had three or four books like this in Star Wars, and everybody's got their own spin on it. And this is different. I just think,
well, this one different actually stories pertains to the story.
Yes.
This is what I was saying when I was saying,
yes,
just give me another thing like Rising Storm. Give me something where it is like a forbidden, or like not even necessarily forbidden, but like a slightly taboo romance.
Yeah.
But it is attainable and achievable. I am so fucking done with the other version that I did not even register.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did not even register Axel and Gela's thing.
Yeah.
Especially because it's one-sided, but it, like as soon as he mentioned it, I was like, nope.
Yep.
Just no.
Yeah, exactly. But like even because we got this right after Path of Deceit, and if you remember the Padawan in that one, and then I can't remember her name. The lady that
pseudo mother,
yeah, no, not the mom. The young girl that was in charge of the younglings,
that basically becomes the mother.
Marta Rowe,
and Zev, something.
Yeah,
Zevmo, something
like that. But it was like that, and then we get this one right after it. It's interesting. Like, I'm just ready to have like a Battlefront Twilight Company book. Like, I'm really excited to have something like that if we do get that in this. There is a book coming up called The Battle of Jeddah, which is an audio drama. So excited for that one.
That's going to be like another one with the Tempest Runner, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Cataclysm is what I'm looking for.
Yeah, Cataclysm.
Cataclysm
good.
And Path of Vengeance.
Yeah, that's near the end. I think Path of Vengeance is our last book.
Because phase two is rather short.
It's like third last, fourth last. But we have a lot to cover. So yeah, it's going to be good. I like Noma said, I'm pleasantly surprised with phase two with the second book. But as we know, it only takes one more book next to just literally stop us from like having that hope. So let's hope that the next one keeps it up. Any last points, guys?
No, don't think so.
Alrighty. Well, I think that means we can get into the outro. Welcome to the outro of the podcast. Thank you again so much for listening to our rankings on that and the episode discussion. If you'd like to get a hold of us and let us know what you rank this episode or this book, or what you want to let us know about this book that you enjoyed, didn't enjoy. Are you also getting tired of the forbidden love trope? Or are you actually like, I'm bored with this one, like we are? By all means, give us a shout and Ed will tell you how to do that.
Absolutely. Remember, all of this information can be found on our website, as well as the show notes of this episode. You can find us over at voiceoftheforce.com. Our email is voiceoftheforce@gmail.com. If you prefer a social media contact, we are on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads. We are at VoiceForcePod on all three platforms. Anything you do, retweet, repost, it could be our new episode retweets, could be something that we've shared from another podcast as well. It helps with growing our listener base and the community in general, and we really do appreciate it. Please listen, rate, review, follow, and subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audible, and all major podcast platforms. Reviewing us with 5 stars and a comment does help with visibility. And when you do subscribe, which is for free, you will get the latest episode information as soon as it releases. Remember, no one did say we are on Twitch. That is correct. And we stream 3 days a week currently. That is Tuesdays, Fridays, and Saturdays. Saturdays being our most popular streaming time at the moment. That is all Eastern time. On Tuesdays, we go from about... Noma, when is it? I believe it is 10 p.m., either 9 or 10 p.m. to about midnight. On Fridays, it's from 6 to 9. And then on Saturdays, we go from 3 p.m. EST to 6 p.m. EST.
If you want to know sure, you can tune in on Twitter, x.com, whatever you want to call it, for the up-to-date posts of when we're going live and if there's any changes to the schedule.
Also, if you go to our Twitch page, twitch.tv/voiceforcegaming, we've got a schedule as well.
Oh, nice.
That'll show you all the times.
Very good. Awesome. And thank you, Ed and Noma. And remember, I got nothing in this one, guys. I honestly can't. I don't even know what to say.
Bruno finds a way!
When you're out of options, your Bane Blade right through the solar plexus,
yes!
You stare to the sky and you scream for Arano.
No, I got it, guys.
It is the Bane Blade, 11 barrels of hell.
And remember, if you love somebody very, very much, carve their name into your food. That makes the perfect point. Please do not do that, for the love of God.
Don't let anybody see you
do it. Yeah. Don't even look at it when you're doing it if you're going to do it.
No, that's like a checklist of like, do that and then listen to like a My Chemical Romance song.
No, do it while you're listening to the My Chemical Romance song.
You really will end up on a list at that point.
Yeah. Also, one last point for listeners. We're going to be covering quite a bit of Bad Batch stuff because it's gotten released. And then we're also going to be doing High Republic at the same time, as I said earlier. So tune in for tons of episodes coming up.